Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Registered representative, securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Investment advisor representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Fujiyama Wealth Management and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley and Junko Horvath. This is Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour, and it's brought to you by our good friends at Fujiyama Wealth Management. Katie.
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun show. It seems it's Japan week.
Yeah, it kind of seems that way.
Well, Junko, welcome back. Great seeing you.
Thank you. So good to see you.
So how are things in your world?
Oh, great. Very busy.
Very busy.
And exciting. Yeah. Many new things going on.
Now, you were able to put together this show to spotlight one of the big events that happened in Atlanta. Can you tell us about it?
Oh, yeah. So I dedicated this show for Japan this week. Mm-hmm. And Japan Fest is one of the biggest events of the, you know, in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And so I brought, ladies who are involved in the Japan Fest and how they are helping and what's their relationship with Japan.
And we're going to learn all about it, right?
Yeah, great. So
who do you want to start with?
Okay, so the three guests today, Ali Gallen, Japan Fest Festival Manager and the Yoga Instructor.
Oh.
And then Sucheta Rawal, and she's an award-winning food and a travel writer and a children's book author, and a founder of 501c organization Go Eat and Give, and Nosin Punjani. She's a co-founder of Stooge, which is an event management software startup company. So I go Ali first.
All right, Junko, thank you.
You're welcome. So Ali, tell us all about Japan Fest. When is it? Where is it? How did it start and all that?
Awesome. Thank you. Japan Fest is in its 32nd year. It is the largest Japanese-related festival in the Southeast. We were one of the top 20 festivals in the Southeast in September this year. And it started off as Japan Week about 32 years ago, a collaboration between the Japan-America Society of Georgia and the Consulate General of Japan in Atlanta as an event to promote Japanese culture, friendship between the U.S. and Japan, and also encourage social harmony and multicultural education. We provide an appropriate mix of authentic, traditional, and contemporary Japanese programs about food, about music, performance. Also, we include a section about Japanese businesses in Georgia and the huge contribution that Japanese companies have in the state. And we have over 400 volunteers that put our festival together every year. So it's a huge community event that involves companies, individuals, schools, and all kinds of people who are there to promote Japanese culture and intercultural communication between the U.S. and Japan.
Great. When is it? And where is it?
Good questions. So it's coming up in about a month, actually exactly 1 month from today. We'll be in the Infinite Energy Center in Duluth, Georgia, Infinite Energy Center on Sugarloaf Parkway, September 15th and 16th. And we'll be open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday.
I see. Mm-hmm. Right.
And you can, it's a family-friendly event. We're super family-oriented. We're going to have actually one of your presenters will be talking a little bit more about that later, but we're going to have lots of events for kids, family-oriented performances and food, and also kids under six are free. So that's another
incentive.
So how
much is a ticket and how can they buy?
Well, tickets are $10 in advance. You can purchase them on our website, japanfest.org. And then they're $12 at the door. So we really recommend buying them in advance because that'll also save you from standing online. And yeah, it just makes everything a lot easier.
Yeah. I've been there many times. Mm-hmm. It's a big event and so much fun. And all the stores. Yeah. And
Yes.
Great. And how did you start? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I lived in Japan for about 12 years. And I came back from Japan about 2.5 years ago. I moved to Georgia. I moved here to marry my husband. And I was new to Georgia, so I didn't have friends. Mm-hmm. And my husband encouraged me to get involved with the Japan America Society. Mm-hmm. It was kind of good timing. They had this event called the Grassroots Summit, which is an annual event where Japanese people come to different cities. Mm-hmm. And that year, it was 2016, they actually came to Atlanta. So I was involved with touring, taking Japanese visitors, tourists, children around the city. And one of the other volunteers noticed that I could speak Japanese. And she said, oh, we need some help with Japan Fest. Are you interested in working as a coordinator? And I thought, sure, I don't have anything else going on at the moment. So, so it worked out well.
I see. So what brought you to Japan? So you were there for 12 years. That's a long time.
It is.
Yeah.
I originally went, I guess I'd been interested in Japanese culture since I was a child. I loved sushi. I loved origami. I loved Japanese art. Mm-hmm. What else? I loved kanji, Japanese characters. Yeah. I thought all of it was really cool and really different. Mm. And when I was in college, a friend of mine was studying Japanese and he showed me some characters and I thought, wow, like they read through pictures. and it sounds so simplistic, but it made me think that they must see the world really differently. Mm. And I was really interested in that idea of just kind of, you know, being in a place where people saw the world really differently. So I was interested in going to Japan and I was, you know, I was 22. Mm. What did I have to lose? So I went to Japan.
The JET program?
That's right. I started on the JET program. Mm. So they paid me to teach English and hang out with kids. And I worked hard, but I also had a lot of fun.
Where did you stay in Japan?
I lived in Aomori Prefecture,
wow,
which is way up at the northern edge of Honshu, the main island. Yeah. Yep, it was beautiful. It was a small fishing village. Mm-hmm. So I was born and raised in New York City. Mm-hmm. So I was really excited to live in the wilderness. But it was a big difference. Yeah.
So now, what was it like to go from coming from the big city to going into that kind of more of an agrarian culture?
Well, I must say it was a nice change of pace. I think I was looking for that. And what I felt the most was the protection and the kind of the community. I felt so much community. Every single person in that village, there was literally like, it was a town of 4,000 people. Everyone knew me because I was the only foreigner or the only one who looked like me. And I just felt like everyone was friends with everyone else and everyone helped each other out. Everyone looked after each other's kids.
Just like New York, right?
Just like just like New York. Exactly.
So, but were they you didn't know the language at first, right? But slowly you learned the language over time?
I had studied for a couple years at school. Mind you, what I'd studied and what people spoke was like
different.
Not in any language at all, but because they spoke dialect as well. Mm, but, you know, people were really patient in that small town. And, you know, people like drew pictures.
But they embraced you. They didn't treat you as an other.
They totally embraced me. I mean, they treated me like, you know, a crazy, like, creature, but they also embraced me, and everyone was my friend, and it was cool.
And then, so did you ever spend time in the big city part of Japan, like Tokyo?
I never lived in Tokyo, but after 2 years in that town, I definitely, you know, it was time. I'd done what I could, and I moved to a more suburban area in south where I was studying. I went to a Japanese university. I did my master's there, and then I moved to Nagoya, which is like the third largest city in Japan. So that's where I spent a lot of time, and it was definitely more comfortable living in a more international city. but you know, still had a little bit of a small town feel. Tokyo for me, a little bit too big. I'm not sure if I'd want to live there.
Did you find that you were longing to come back to America, or you were thinking at some point, hey, this is my life now, I'm going to be here?
I had, you know, my mind was in both ways. I thought if I was going to stay in Japan, I would definitely need a family. So I was planning on getting married and you know, planning roots. But when that didn't wind up happening, I definitely felt like, yeah, there's a lot of things pulling me back to America. And my family was a big part of that, but also wanting to go back to school for psychology. So I knew that was something I'd have to do back in the States.
And then by getting involved in this event, does that bring back memories? Are you...
Oh yeah,
kind of recreating some of the the things you liked back there. Now you get to see them here.
Oh, there's so much. I mean, I get sentimental all the time. Like when we talk about like listening to like Japanese songs or seeing different things or even just speaking Japanese, it really makes me like remember all those amazing times.
And this event for the person who hasn't been maybe is a good way to get a good kind of 360 view of Japan. Living in Japan or being part of Japanese culture?
Oh, yeah. Japan Fest, what's so amazing about it is, so there's a lot of like anime festivals around the country, even in Atlanta. There's some great ones like Momocon and Atlanta or Anime Weekend Atlanta, but that only highlights one part of Japanese culture. Japan Fest highlights music, performance, traditional culture like the tea ceremony, martial arts, food, a lot of the crafts, so many different aspects of Japanese culture. So you can really see all of those pieces, as you said, like a 360 view. So definitely a great way to get a taste of Japanese culture. And that's why people come from all over the Southeast. You have people coming from Alabama, North and South Carolinas, all over Georgia, because it's the biggest one in the area.
And it's held at an arena, like it's not a small...
That's right.
Right, this is a big...
That's yeah. Right. Well, we have about 10 to 12,000 participants each day. So wow. It's a pretty big festival and it's pretty packed. But yeah, it's a large.
And there's forum. Performances happening kind of concurrently all day long. And then there's stuff to see and buy. And so you get a lot of action.
Lots of stuff going on. It's hard to see everything.
So crowded.
Come both days because you can't see everything in one day.
Yeah, I tried to go always like 10 o'clock, and then even though I go like at 10,
and that's right when it opens.
Yeah,
that's
already people that's already parking. There.
People are lining up at like 9. I'm not kidding, literally. And so I should mention because this is actually really exciting. This year we're going to have a performer. Not every year do we get a performer coming straight from Japan. This year, with the support of the Japanese consulate, we were able to get a performer from Japan who will be performing a type of Japanese performance called Kyogen, which is probably a lot of you are not that familiar with it because it's not esoteric, but it's just not popular. And it is a traditional art form. It has been around for centuries, for over 1,000 years, actually. And it was traditionally... So you might have heard of no theater, which is the traditional court theater. And no is kind of like the drama. Kyogen is like the comedy aspect or the tragedy and the comedy. Mm-hmm. So Kyogen is this comedic theater. They're going to be – these are master Kyogen performers. Four of them are coming from Nagoya, and we're super excited to welcome them this year. So it's another incentive to come because you won't see that anywhere else.
Yeah, and tell us more about what kind of performing. I know that Japanese ladies dance and what else? Like judo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've got five different stages. Mm-hmm. So we've got our main stage. You're going to see the Japanese performers of Kyogen. You're going to see the Taiko group. You're going to see our samurai sword performers. We have a Rakugo performer who's a storyteller, traditional Japanese storyteller. We also have shamisen players, so the Japanese three-stringed banjo, and who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting someone. I feel so bad. Oh, yes, Kagura. So Kagura is a new performance this year, and they're going to be doing this really incredible dance with these huge props, like snake props. It's traditional dance from Japan called Iwami Kagura, and it's actually their first time performing this particular dance outside of New York City because the props require so much shipping, and it's really hard to carry them around. Mm-hmm. So this first time outside of New York, which is pretty cool. And then on our smaller stages, we have a lot of local performers who are like school groups as well as a lot of martial arts groups. So we have all kinds of martial arts from kendo to aikido, karate, jiu-jitsu, all kinds of martial arts. And then we also have some school groups who will be singing and playing taiko, really cute taiko, little tiny kids doing Japanese songs and taiko. And we also have our anime stage, which has lots of anime workshops and performances. We have voice actors. Mm-hmm. And then, and then what else do we have? Oh, and then on the food court stage, that's our huge stage or smaller stage in the food court where that's going to be.
The restaurants come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can, like, while you're eating, you can watch all of the main stage performers on the food
and
court.
And some classes, too. Lectures?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What kind of lectures?
We have lectures about haiku. We have the Haiku Society of America coming. They're going to teach you how to make a haiku. We have lectures or demonstrations about aikido and also about jiu-jitsu. We have some travel agents or travel groups who are going to talk about traveling in Japan. We have our favorite Carl Rosa. He's going to come back to talk about sushi. He's the sushi king of Houston. He runs a travel agency and also teaches classes about how to make sushi in Houston. Lots of online content as well. He's going to be teaching. And also some of our guest performers are going to be doing workshops about Rakugo ghost stories, right? We're going to do Japanese ghost stories and shamisen as well. So lots of stuff to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's just packed with stuff, and it does take 2 days to kind of go through the whole thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then at japanfest.org is the website?
That's right, japanfest.org. You can buy tickets, find out all about our content, and even if you want to get in contact, you can contact us through the website as well.
Now, if somebody wants to sponsor, is there still room available for sponsors?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely room for sponsors. We're making up the program now, so get in. You can sponsor through the participate page. We welcome sponsors, but we're full on booths. So
booths?
No more
Sorry,
booths.
Next year.
Next year for booths. Get in early. But
did I get in?
You got in.
Yeah.
We got you in.
Just snuck in there.
Just snuck in. We made space for Jinko.
That's right. Good. I said I do radio, so.
There you go. They found room.
Yeah. Great.
So now who do you got next?
Okay. So my next guest is Sucheta Rawal. And she just came back from India, right?
Yes, nice to be here.
Yeah, great. So just tell us about, you have a lot going on that, you know, the travel, you know, you have your own charitable foundation, and you are children's book author, and you just published the fourth book. That's about Japan. Talk to us about, you know, what you do.
Sure. I've been a travel writer for over 10 years, and I've traveled to almost 80 countries. And some of these books have inspired me to share stories, not just for adults, but also for kids, and teach them about different countries and cultures and how kids live in different parts of the world. So the series is called Beato Goes To. And it's about a real cat who lives right here in Atlanta. He's my cat. He's not actually traveling, but he's my avatar. And he's curious. He wants to learn about different countries and different places. And he meets a kid in every country who acts as his tour guide and takes him around to show him his culture. So in the fourth book, which is Beato Goes to Japan, there's a girl, Kazumi, who is also a girl from Japan who lives here in Atlanta. Mm. She's from Okinawa. And these are her exact pictures when she was 7 years old, how she dressed, how she looked, and some of the favorite things for her to do in Japan. So Beato and Kazumi travel around. They learn about some of the things Ali mentioned, calligraphy and judo and martial arts, and they visit the cherry blossom festivals, Mount Fuji. And the idea is to share about Japan, what it was, some of the folk tales, but also what it is right now. Because kids often just pick up the cartoons or the folk tale stories, but they don't really know how Japanese kids are living there right now and some of their interests. So that's the hope that I have with Biero Goes to Japan, which is just released about a month ago.
That's great. So what other countries' books, children's books, did you write before?
So the previous three books are on Greenland, Israel, and Indonesia.
Interesting.
How'd you choose those?
They are all based on my personal experiences and kids that really left a mark on me personally while I was traveling there. So for Greenland, for example, I was staying at a sheep farm with this girl, Ina, and her parents. And she was living just there with her parents, 200 sheep and two dogs. And her nearest neighbor was 40 minutes by boat. Whoa. And by boat, I mean like you're going through glaciers. So no television, no cell
isolated.
Phone, no satellite, nothing. It's just very isolated. And yet, when I was staying at her sheep farm with her, she was my tour guide. Mm. And she, at 7 years of age, she was having conversations with me and taking me around her farm. And I wanted to share that story of how this girl lives in such isolation, yet is so smart. And is able to communicate with adults from different places. And how, you know, she's not going to be able to share her story because she doesn't have any internet connection. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to do that with kids here.
How did you find her?
It was a long story. I found her through the Greenland Tourism, who was helping the parents start just a sheep. They have a sheep farm, and then they just started a boarding house for, like, two people who can come stay there.
And then you told them you were writing a book from a child's perspective?
Well, at that time, I was not writing children's books. I was still writing travel articles. So the story was on Greenland, and the Greenland Tourism Department had invited me to go around the country for 2 weeks. So this was part of their offering.
Mm. Wow.
How about for Israel? That's interesting.
So Israel is one of those destinations that you hear mixed things about, especially with the media. There's a lot of negative perception about Jerusalem specifically. And my experience there was very different. I felt like you are in this 6 miles radius where so many different ethnic backgrounds and religious backgrounds are living together. And while I was there for 10 days, I never saw anything happening. Yeah. I felt there was more peace than chaos, which... You know, the chaos is highlighted.
Well, the chaos makes the headlines, the peace doesn't.
Yeah, it's safer, you know, soldiers everywhere.
Well, not just that, it's a thousands of years history. Mm-hmm. And then you have people living in such close proximity who are from different religions and have different ethnic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And yet they get along for the most part.
Yeah.
So that's the story I really wanted to highlight in the Israel book and how kids can learn about diverse religions.
It's a beautiful country, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, for you, diversity and this kind of cultural education, that's important topics for you. How did the Japan Fest come into play in this? This was an avenue for you to share your book. And like, why'd you want to get involved in the event?
Absolutely. So I'm looking for outlets to share the books and the cultural experiences, because these are all true stories in my personal experiences of being in Japan. And I've been in conversation with Japan American Society, not just here in Atlanta, but I did a presentation in Alabama, and I'm doing one in the fall in San Francisco. And the idea is that the Japanese society can use this book as a tool to educate the population about Japanese culture. Because most books you'll find, and Ali, you can correct me, are in Japanese. Or they are manga, they are comics. So they're really not talking about Japanese culture right now and educating little kids, you know, non-Japanese kids about it.
Right. So then these types of festivals you go to all over?
I do, yeah.
So do you have a favorite?
I don't know if I have a favorite. They are all so great. I'm doing the Decatur Book Festival end of this month and the... international festival in Huntsville in September. So we'll see how it goes.
How did you get started? You had a career before.
Yes, I used to work in investment banking before.
It's a logical path, right, to writing children's books, right?
If you had asked me 4 years ago, would you be writing children's books, I would have said you know, this is totally your nuts. I have no clue how to write for kids. I don't have kids. But I started writing about food in Atlanta when I was still in college, and it was doing restaurant reviews, which transitioned into writing about travel. And eventually led me to quit my job, which I'm very happy about, and do this full time. So I've been writing for adults for over 15 years. But there was about 3-4 years ago, one of my assignments for the Huffington Post was to find children's books that teach them about different cultures.
Right.
And this was a story around Thanksgiving, Christmas time that people can buy gifts. And I did so much research. I went to every library, every bookstore to see what was out there. And there was hardly anything. There would be an occasional book about Native American culture or African American children. But there was hardly anything that taught you about far off places, you know, places like Greenland. So that's when I was sitting in my couch with my cat and my laptop. And it just hit me that this is what you need to do next.
And then that's what you have been doing. This is the fourth book, you said?
Yes, this is the fourth book.
And then there's many more to come?
Yes.
Now, are they published? The publisher is a traditional publisher, or are you self-published? What you
do? They are a hybrid publisher. It's called Mascot Books, and they're based in Virginia. And the publisher actually is originally from Nepal.
So they could relate to these type of...
Yes. And my illustrators are ladies in Romania.
And how'd you find those?
I found them online through one of the websites. And I met them for the first time last month after working on four books.
So how did you... Going through that process of creating a book in this hybrid manner, that required of you to find the different elements, right? Or did the publisher help you find the illustrators?
Not necessarily. They have their own illustrators, but... when I approached them, I had already found my illustrators, and I really like their work, which you can see is very different. It's not like a traditional picture book. It's between a picture book and a comic book. So even if you don't read the words, you can still follow along the story. And it's highly detailed because it's based on actual photographs that I've taken.
So you would give them a photograph, and then they would work with that?
Right.
And then how hard was it to find the right illustrator? Did you go through several... people?
I searched pretty much the entire world. And
how long did it take? Months? Was it months?
It did take months. And I had proposals from someone in Brazil, someone in the Philippines, in India, in US, and the Romanian ladies who actually, the one who does the illustration, she's 24 right now. She was 20 at the time. And she cannot speak or hear, which I did not know that.
So you were just communicating?
We were communicating by email,
right.
Yeah.
Wow. That's an amazing story. See, the world's flat, right?
Yeah.
This is a beautiful book. I mean,
absolutely.
I saw it on Amazon, no?
Yes.
Yeah, it's available everywhere, right?
Yeah, they're available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and most independent bookstores. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, schools should start using your book.
Thank you.
To teach the kids.
Yeah. Yeah. You make that happen, Junko.
Yeah.
Come on.
I got to get on it. Good. So, what do you want to talk about your organization? And
where'd the nonprofit come into play?
Yeah, so Go Eat Give is the 501c3 nonprofit that I founded soon after I went writing full time. And the reason was because a lot of my readers were approaching me and saying that you're having these very different kind of experiences when you travel, which involves mostly volunteering or meeting locals and not just going to all the tourist highlight places.
Right.
So that's why I founded the organization where we help other people to have sustainable and meaningful travels. And sometimes we organize group trips. We have trips coming up to Indonesia next month and Morocco in the fall. But we also do customized individual trips where it's not just about sightseeing, but it's about having these one-on-one, people-to-people interactions with the locals and doing some sort of meaningful work while you're there.
Right, rather than just be a tourist and seeing all the typical things that a tourist would see.
Absolutely.
And so you get a deeper, richer kind of view of the country.
Yeah, you will not come back with the exact same pictures as all of your friends
else, right? And then that's done through a nonprofit organization, though?
The nonprofit is Go Eat Give.
And then so then, but that's the one that's coordinating the travel?
Yes, Go Eat Give. We do everything from flights, on the ground bookings, hotels, experiences, even going to people's homes for dinners.
Wow. That's great. So if somebody wants to learn more about that?
That would be goeatgive.com.
And then if somebody wants to get a hold of the book?
The books are Beato Goes To. And
Beato Goes To.com.
You highly recommend checking out Beato Instagram page because if you're a cat lover.
A lot of travel pics. So now at the Japan Fest, what will you be doing there?
So I will have a booth with my books and I'll be doing book signings and I'll also be doing some readings in the children's section.
Are you bringing your cat?
I'm not sure how he'll feel about 1,000 people around him. But they'll be able to see pictures.
Great.
So that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. You're doing important work.
Thank you for having me.
Good. So my last guest, but not least, Nosin Punjani.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So you tell us about your involvement with Japan Fest.
Sure. So
you got to get in there, Nosin.
Yes.
You got to lean in there.
I'm so sorry.
Come on.
I'm learning this. So you know how we all love Japan Fest, right? There are multiple other factors that bring the festivals together, which usually involves vendors, your sponsors, your volunteers, things we tend to look over when we're just attending the festival. Mm-hmm. So what requires all of those different pieces to make it come together? We bring that into one software solution. So like, let's say a vendor has to apply to Japan Fest, mm-hmm. or a sponsor has to apply to Japan Fest. A volunteer may need shift timing slotted out for them and guidance on all of those different pieces. We bring that in one software package. So like the event organizers themselves can manage and communicate easily with these different aspects that bring the festival together. What I like to say is that we remove all of that administrative burden that goes behind the festival so you can truly enjoy the festival while you're there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So now how did this come about?
So it actually started because my husband and I started together. We both decided to quit our jobs. I know.
That sounds like a recurring theme here.
Not the best financial decision at the same timing. And it all started because my husband's sister, my sister-in-law, she hosts dance events. And she told us how she used Ticketmaster. And Ticketmaster was charging her a very hefty fee. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, they don't do anything for your vendors or your sponsors or your volunteers. For all of those different things, she had to pay for different software packages and not being able to manage and communicate with them easily. So what she said is that she was like, can you build me just something so that I can use it?
Just build me something.
Build me something. That's exactly what she said.
How hard is that, right?
I know. And my husband was like, I guess, you know, I do have a full-time job. But I'll build you something so you can work with it, right? She ended up loving it. And then after that, we were like, maybe we should create this as a business model. Maybe we should give this a shot. So we said, all right, let's quit our jobs. Probably not the best decision immediately. And we learned. And we love it, though. I would never go back for anything.
Yeah. So what's your background?
My background is actually in biostatistics, which I know nobody likes. That's why I have usually a job there. But it mostly involves like analytical work, which is oftentimes in the healthcare. So statistics, I noticed, is common theme in the healthcare world.
Yeah.
But for event managers, that's lacking. Hmm. You know, there's definitely a need for it.
Yeah.
How do you identify how many sponsors you have? How do you identify if you can make an economic impact on your festival? What is it truly doing? And how can we bring this same field that I'm in and use those skill sets to bring that into a festival industry?
So then you're bringing kind of this data kind of mindset into a festival where historically that hasn't been the case?
Yes, and the management. So like, let's say you have to apply, application processes are there, but they're all separate. Each section varies, like with your vendors, your sponsors, your volunteers, and even your custom things, like let's say a cook-off or, I don't know, a martial arts competition. All of those different things, probably not the greatest thing. But if you think about that, all of them revolve around an application. sometimes you have to process fees. Sometimes you have to manage and communicate with them. And now let's say there's an emergency. How do you notify all of the participants when you have 20,000 people attending your festival?
Right.
How do you do it immediately? We bring that all in one.
So now the first iteration of this is obviously much different than today's,
yes.
right? So
yes.
it was kind of a bare bones.
Very bare bones. We actually started only with ticketing at that time.
Uh-huh.
And we were trying to help her out just with her like one-off vendor application or her one-off sponsor applications. After that, we decided maybe this could turn into a business. Then we spoke with Peachtree Corners Festival, mm-hmm. and that's kind of where it trickled. They guided us on attending the festival, volunteering at different festivals, getting that complete exposure to truly understand the need.
And then, but that's just one festival. Every festival has its own kind
yeah.
of stuff involved, right?
They do.
And then so your offering just kept expanding to cover more and more of the challenges that each of the festivals have?
Essentially, yes, but the foundation is about the same.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes you may label things differently, but they all have the basic foundation, vendors or exhibitors, sponsors, or anyone that's doing in-kind donations.
Right.
You always have the volunteers. The foundation is pretty much the same, but there are those custom processes. So why can we not create something similar that's a custom application that gives you the same perspective, the same idea that goes behind everything?
So now, is it more of a software as a service for the event, or is it more of an interacting social media amplification tool for the attendee?
It's entirely right now at this point in time, entirely for a management tool for the event organizer. At one point in time, we will get to that, you know, where we're actually reaching out to understand the experience that goes behind the festival.
Because there's a lot of data behind that part
yes,
of that.
You are absolutely right. And we've thought about that. That's why I say not yet. So definitely a key thing that we're thinking about. It's just time. And just to give you a timeline as to when we started, it was in January this year.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So you've come a long way pretty quickly.
We have, exactly.
So events are hungry for this kind of tool.
Oh, yeah. It's a need. It's a desperate need. And I'm ashamed, I think, just of my own background and seeing that folks in the data industry in general, right, are not focusing on this. This, I mean, events are such a big deal.
Right. They're happening all the time all over the planet.
Exactly. Maybe even outside of that. But why have we not stepped into this yet? You know, there's a need, but yet every other industry in the event technology world focuses only on ticketing because that's the easiest and the fastest way
right.
to collect
it's transaction.
Money.
That's where the money is.
That's right. where the money is. You said it better. Exactly that. So what about everything else? Mm. You know, Japan Fest isn't only about tickets.
Right.
In fact, it's the least. You
yeah,
know,
it's a very small, minimal
amount that allows it's for the community. It's giving back.
Right.
But what can we do that really involves the event organizer's pain, right? Bringing all of this together. And I didn't even share the statistics. Event coordinators are have the fifth most stressful job in the world.
Well, how many moving parts?
Right. And I'm so sorry to say that, but
well,
you know.
Allie already knew that. You didn't have to tell her.
Allie's like, I know. I can feel it. And that's compared to a soldier, compared to a police officer, those that involve life.
Right.
How is that the fifth?
Because they're getting pulled
job?
In so many different directions.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stressors kind of.
Yeah, but Ali does yoga, so she's okay.
It helps.
Yeah,
and she, it helps. Yeah. It eliminates that stress, exactly.
Yeah. So now talk about how you got involved with Japan Fest and how you've been able to help them.
Yeah, so actually a member from the Gwinnett Chamber of Commerce connected us, Lee Wong, if you know of him.
No.
No. Okay. Well,
same name.
Well, a common name too. Lee introduced me to Yoshi, and that's when I actually had a chance to just meet and interact with him. And unfortunately, the festival is right around the corner, so it's just bad timing that we can't help them out this year. But there is an opportunity to help them next year, which we are super excited about.
And the more you learn about it and immerse yourself in it, the more you'll be able to serve them.
Absolutely. And guess what we're doing? We're attending the event this year, so
there you
we
go.
Are super excited. Yeah.
That's great. And what's the size of the event you help? Like big events? Or you can even do for the small events? And what's your plan?
That's a great question. And we can work from small events all the way up to large events. And mostly we work with festivals and conventions at this point in time. But it can range from 5,000 people to 100,000 people to 200 to 300,000 people. So, I mean, it can vary quite a bit.
Wow. Yeah. So mostly in the like a charitable space or the corporations too?
Most of the folks that we work with are nonprofits and city governments. A few are also private, which is definitely something to consider. You know, that it's not just nonprofits that we work with, but it's a more need there, you know. So we have to make sure that our costs are associated with that as well. So we have to be budget friendly as well.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So now how do they find you?
That's a great question. So far, I've been either reaching out to folks or I've been getting referrals and mostly just working with different associations. So whether if it's like a small festival association in the Southeast region or international festival and events associations, we're working with them collaboratively to just kind of identify those folks that need us at this point in time.
Now, how many festivals are there?
Oh, my gosh. So many. It's like I can't even count.
Is it
The market, I can tell you, is like $132 billion industry.
Wow.
Yeah, it's big.
But so, the number, like in Atlanta, how many festivals go on in a
Atlanta.
Year? I mean, could you even...
Tennessee has 81, I believe, just Tennessee. So I'm assuming Atlanta itself probably has over 100 festivals.
Right,
just
so that's
Sydney.
Like two a week.
Two a week, yes.
So it's a huge market.
It's a huge market, and it's growing by 10% every year.
Because
so
people like, because that's the thing, people think that everybody's online, but they want to go out and do this stuff, right? Allie, you agree with that? That this is an important thing for people to understand, that people think online is where it's at.
Yeah.
But people want real life experiences, right?
And
I think Saketa, you can probably comment on that as well. Yeah. Travel's probably as big as ever.
Yes. There are more travel blogs and writing now than any time in history. Most of the pages on Instagram you see are on travel. People are sharing their own experiences and wanting to read about others. And not just that, they want to do more experiential travel. It's also changed a lot with that, you know, from Airbnb to couchsurfing and to going to people's homes.
Right. You can't have a good Instagram if you're not going anywhere, right? It can't be all of you in the house eating, right?
Yeah.
You got to go out there and experience the world.
Yeah.
Now, Allie, this festival is a great way for people to kind of get a feel for Japan.
Yes.
It's a kind of a 3D travel brochure for Japan,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And for people like, I met a woman last year who's from Alabama who loves Japanese calligraphy. And she brought all her calligraphy. And for people from different towns and different places where they might not have access to a large Japanese community, it's a wonderful time to get in touch with Japanese people, Japanese culture, and, you know, communicate, interact. And there's lots of, as we said, workshops and performances and places where people can do that. So as you said, everything's online these days and so many people access their culture online. But Japan Fest is a chance to really touch it and feel
That's right.
And talk to people.
Now, Nasheen, if they have a festival or an event, this is an app. Right? Or is it a software?
It's a software. At this point in time. We are working on the app development as we speak. So that's definitely very exciting.
And then so if you have an event out there and you want to kind of have some project management, how do you describe the value proposition of the software?
Very similar to what you mentioned. I would describe it as a project management tool. You do have opportunities to like link it with your social media accounts as well. So you can publish on like Facebook, Instagram, all of the different Twitter, even if you have that, all of those different pieces as well. But it's an area where you as an event organizer can manage all of the applications that come in. You can communicate with folks that either at a mass level or individual level. So if you want to notify all of the vendors that are coming in what time to set up your booths, you can do that immediately. You know,
it's self-contained.
Exactly. Yes.
Right.
So it makes it so much easier.
And so everything's in one place. Yes. All the contacts are in one place. And then the interactions happen in one place.
Yes.
So then for the event coordinator, they have simplified life.
Yes. Exactly. Hopefully. Yes.
But it saves them time. It saves them kind of miscommunications. That eliminates a lot of that.
Yes.
Right. And where's that email address? What's the best way to get all that goes away?
Yes. So you don't have to hunt through those emails. Like, and let's say you have to refund. I mean, most of the festivals that we work with around 200 to 300 festivals on vendors on average.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you think about that, let's say 5 out of those 300 vendors now will not be able to show up. So you have to refund them as well. And that process is complicated when you're dealing with manual processes.
Right.
Like checks. you know, that gets lost. There's data privacy issues, all of those different things. We bring it all into an electronic format.
And then what's the website?
It's called Stooge App. Stooge as in like the Three Stooges,
right?
app.com.
And Stooge App, that's the name of the company as well, Stooge?
Stooge is the name of the company, yes.
And then you've done events for dozens, I guess, since the beginning of the year, 100? Where are you at?
We are working with 320 different events and festivals in the Southeast
region. In just a matter of 9 months?
Yes, yes. And and working as in like maybe we might have started midway, you know, as their festival has already started. So we're planning for next year. We might be planning for 18 months. Some of them plan for 18 months in advance. Mm. So all of those can vary.
And then the way the pricing works, it's software as a service pricing?
It's a subscription model.
Subscription.
Yes, we want to stay. And the reason why we do that is so that we actually stay in contact with you. Mm-hmm. It's not contractual. We don't have any cancellation fees or any of that, you know, no setup. We want to be heavily involved with your festival and event.
And it's you should treat it as the festival happens maybe on a weekend, but you're working on it year round, right?
Yes, that's the reason. Yeah. Right. Most people are like, well, I only have one festival a year, but how long does it take to plan that festival?
It's not like a week before you start, right? This is something that as soon as, Allie, your thing ends, you're probably asking these people to re-up, right?
Before. We're already talking about what's going on next year and planning for grants.
Right. So it's not.
Exactly.
And your tool helps them in that regard.
Exactly. And we would like to be involved. So like, let's say you're struggling with something. We want to help you with even outside of that. Let's say you can't find vendors. Although it's not a software solution, we would be able to guide you on finding our vendor database, our sponsor database, connecting with those
and
resources.
Best practices.
And best practices, exactly.
Mm, you have a bright future.
Oh, I hope so. It's challenging. The struggles are very real, though.
I understand that as an entrepreneur, at the beginning, it's hard, but you'll be successful.
I hope so. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. And Ali, again, so Japan Fest, September 15th.
September 15th and 16th. And I forgot to mention, we also, you can access free tickets for students from K through 12 schools on our website as well. So we really want as many kids to come as possible, even if they can't afford tickets. So all that's on the website. Yeah. And I just want to say, I'm so happy to meet you ladies and be working with you this year. That's really
so
exciting.
This is a great event. And Junko, thank you so much
for getting
the word out about this important event. Yeah. Everybody in Atlanta should go. And the people in the Southeast, it's amazing how it's expanded, right? In 30 years, I bet they couldn't even imagine the impact they're having today.
It's amazing that something has lasted this long. It's really cool.
Right.
Well, Junko, great show.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed very much. Thank you so much.
All right.
Have a wonderful day.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Registered representative, securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Investment Advisor Representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Fujiyama Wealth Management and Cambridge are not affiliated.